You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to join us over at the Discord room linked at Beekeeping for Newbies. It's newbees.com. Right there on the left-hand side, we've got a link to get into the Discord room and to chat it up with the rest of the team and the crew. All right, folks, we are on episode 157. And today, we're doing an episode that I really didn't have planned until I got an email. And I want to let you know that I'm doing this not in any way, shape, or form to pick on the person who sent me the message. I gave them a pretty long write-up and explanation as to kind of, you know, what my thoughts were around this. But it's a great learning opportunity for everybody. And, you know, beekeeping is tough. And I look back at those early days and those early years, and it's just like you're beating the head against the wall. And it's just one thing after another. And you take one step forward, two steps back. It's a very frustrating thing. And I think that one area that we as people on the educational side of it struggle is people will say, well, hey, what is this? And we're like, oh, okay, well, here is this. And we go and show or tell or talk about a specific item or subject or topic. And then we move on to the next thing. And somebody who's new sees or hears about that and they go, oh, wow, that's really cool. I should go do that. I think a great example of this is math. Like whether you're in the UK or the US, Canada, anywhere in the world, 4 + 4 = 8, 3 + 2 = 5, 6 + 7 = 92, things like that. So it's concrete. Like wherever you are in the world, those things are true. But you can be a beekeeper in St. Louis, Missouri, and have somebody just across the river there in O'Fallon, Illinois, and they have a completely different experience. There are so many variables involved. There are literally like millions of variables involved in every single instance of a beekeeper's experience compared to someone else's, that it's really, really difficult. And that's why we always talk about like foundational things, things that are broadly accepted as being true everywhere. And then everything else is kind of something different. So it's really, really tough, especially like I said, on the educational side. So when we teach things, I do the best I can to say, hey, here is this thing. And here is why it's good. Here are some of the risks associated with it. Here are the times of year when it's better or worse, things like that. So that is the whole driver behind this episode. I'm absolutely not picking on the gentleman who sent this. I'm really glad they did because it's a great topic to talk about. One thing I did miss in the beginning here is I wanted to thank Sarah. So she has been a longtime supporter of the podcast. I left her out of my list last week. Completely forgot about that. So, Sarah, my apologies for missing you last week. And, of course, the two moderators of our Discord room, Ryan and JT, I appreciate both of you for all your help in keeping things in order there. So thank you guys very much. I wanted to make sure I got that out. And today's warm-up song is She Is by The Fray. Almost forgot that one. Okay, so let me tell you what happened. I got a message on June 9th, and somebody said, hey, look, I'm looking at doing a walk-away split. I'm thinking about doing it, you know, the next couple of days. You know, what do you think? And so I asked a question. I was like, well, hey, you know, what are you trying to accomplish? What are your thoughts? You know, what's the thought process here that's driving this decision? Because to me, this is right now the beginning of the dearth where I live. You know, maybe you didn't see a lot of, you know, pollen coming in and a lot of resources maybe over the past week. Maybe you have a few more days left, but it's pretty much here at this point in time. We're not going to have any forage available until August. And usually it's like around early to mid-August, 10th through the 15th, 20th, depending on weather and everything. So we have almost 2 months of nothing. This is a really scary time for me. So when someone says, hey, I'm thinking about doing a walk-away split, I mean, I just, alarms go off everywhere. I'm like, whoa, hold on, what's going on? Now, if I'm remembering correctly, I should have put this in my notes, but I'm pretty sure that they are in Alabama because it immediately reminded me of the Chuckwagon Barbecue there in Huntsville. Oh, God, I miss that place. I used to, back in the old sales days, I used to call on NASA. So you have Marshall Space Flight Center is down there. And every time I went there, I planned my flights and my meetings around getting to the chuck wagon to make sure I could get that barbecue. Anyway, so down in Alabama, this is where this gentleman's trying to do this. He says, look, I'm trying to become a self-sufficient, self-sustaining apiary. And what I want to do is I want to assess the drone availability kind of in my area. And I think, well, that's a great idea, right? You want to be a self-sustaining beekeeper. You know that pretty much, unless you have separate mating yards in other locations, which we'll talk about, if you're just operating in one location, I think he said there's nobody he's aware of that has any, you know, beehives within like 10 miles. So that's a really big challenge because typically your bees, in most cases, your drones are not going to mate with any queens in your apiary. The queens tend to travel, you know, further away, and that's just how they're genetically designed, which makes a lot of sense to introduce additional genetic diversity into the, you know, your apiary and within those queens themselves. So you have to have some external help. And what a lot of people have done is they use mating yards. They take their bees and their mating nucs, and they go to specific locations with them. And that is strictly dedicated to, you know, getting those new virgin queens mated. They emerge from the cells, they go out, they mate, they come back. And they usually, it's about a 2-week kind of thing that they'll do. They'll drop the mating nucs off, come back 2 weeks later, you should have mated queens and some eggs. And you may even have a swarm cell popping up because those little mating nucs are pretty small if you're using like the little styrofoam ones. But if you're operating again out of a single location, and in this case, I mean, obviously there could be some feral bees that are out there in the woods and the surrounding area. But it's kind of rolling the dice a little bit. You may have some good fortune there, or you may not. So where his head is, I 100% get it. But the time of year is really tough. So I wanted to go through and start by first defining what a split is, because I'm sure there's probably at least one or two or 20 people who are maybe checking out the podcast for the first time, and they're brand new. They're just trying to learn. They said, I'm not going to start with episode one. I'll just figure it out. So we're going to talk about what is a split. We're going to talk about differentiating a walkaway split from some of the others. We're going to talk about why timing is really important. And lastly, I'm going to tell you why I haven't done a walkaway split in over a decade, because I feel that they're pretty disruptive and they're not the most efficient way of doing things. So I don't do them. Okay, so let's go ahead and kick this off with what is a split. In the spring, nature's way of saying, okay, honeybees, it's time for you to procreate and make more of you, is the swarm. So what will happen is there is a massive inflow of resources. The colonies is starting to detect at the end of the winter, like, hey, I think we have some things coming into bloom, and we need to start ramping up because the spring is right around the corner. So like late winter, they're going to start ramping up their brood production. And ideally, the nectar flow hits, lots of new brood is emerging with new worker bees, and they're going to continue laying more brood, and you have this massive explosion in the overall size of the colony. You have a colony that maybe overwintered with, you know, anywhere from potentially a really small colony that's struggling, may only have a few thousand bees left, and within a couple of months, you've got a 40,000, you know, 40, 45, 50,000 bee colony if you can prevent them from swarming. So they're going to ramp up their size really, really fast. And what they do to procreate is they make a queen cell, or sometimes, you know, 10 or 15 of them, but they will make queen cells. That queen will then leave with about half the colony, go somewhere else. A new queen will be born or will emerge from the queen cell, get mated, and return to take over the operations of that hive, that colony. When you do a split, you're basically saying, hey, don't worry about swarming. I'm going to handle this for you. It allows the beekeeper to multiply the number of colonies that they're maintaining. It reduces that urge and the pressure to swarm. And there's a lot of reasons why splitting can make a lot of sense. There's also a lot of reasons why you may not want to split, which is a whole separate discussion on how we prevent that. But walkaway splitting is one way of doing things. I'll just briefly, we've talked about this quite extensively in the past. But the walkaway split, of course, is one method where you literally just divide all the resources up in the hive between two of them. Now you divide everything in half. Let's say, for example, you had two deep boxes, you know, the big boxes that had 10 frames in each of them. You just add an empty box, you know, a few feet away or 20 feet away or wherever you want to do it. and go through the resources. Honey frame for you, honey frame for you, brood frame for you, brood frame for you, pollen frame for you, and just keep going until everything is divided up. One colony will have the queen, the other one will not. Now, what I would prefer to do if I'm doing this is I would do it in a way where I found the queen, I know where she is, and I make that colony slightly smaller. So they may only get like 30 to 35% of the resources. And then I would make the colony that is queenless, I would give them like 60 to 65% of the resources, because I have a queen and the one who's going to keep laying and replacing all of the workers that we just gave away. Whereas the other hive is not going to get anybody new for a long time to help support things. Now, the one requirement is that the colony or the new colony that does not have a queen, they must have eggs or very young larvae, like 1 or 2 day old larvae, in order for them to create a queen cell to make a queen. So that's kind of a walk away in a nutshell. The next option would be to take a queen cell, insert the queen cell into this hive that is now queenless from your split. And then at that point in time, you're a couple days away from a virgin queen emerging. Give her, you know, a few days to a week to reach sexual maturity, a few more days to go out, do her mating flight, come back and, you know, start laying. And then the best option would be introducing a mated queen. You have her in a queen cage, put it in the hive, give it a couple days to let her emerge after everybody kind of knows who she is, and she can get to work within a couple days. After that, you've got eggs within a week. Great way to go. But the critical aspect of this, in my opinion, you know, I've said this a lot, you have a lot of latitude with what you do and how you do it if you do it at the right time of year. When you're on a nectar flow and things are going great, you can kind of, you can get away with a whole lot. You can mix and match and move things around. As long as there's kind of a few bees left and you still have a queen, they're still going to ramp up and work hard and get things done. When there is not a nectar flow, everything changes. So a lot of people right now, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere, you're about to get a rude awakening if you have not already. We've had a lot of struggles with swarming this year. We have not had as many issues with just general queenlessness as we tend to have in the past, but a lot of issues with swarming this year. But the reason timing is important is because once you do a split like this or any kind of a split, you need the colony to have continuous access to resources in order to continue building and to rebuild all of the bees that have just left, as well as replacing, you know, any resources that were used to raise the new brood, packing away enough nectar, pollen, everything that they're going to need to get them through the winter in the form of honey. And they also usually like to have some, you know, some pollen set aside so that in the spring, they've got something that's immediately available for them to use to start rearing new, you know, new brood at the end of the winter time.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So timing is critically important. So now I'm going to get into the reason why I haven't done one in over a decade. We're going to go through the actual time frame of all of these, so that you can kind of understand just how long it's going to take that colony to get to a point where they're now replacing, you know, workers. A queen egg, so a, you know, a regular egg, all eggs are the same if they are fertilized eggs. A fertilized egg will either become a worker or it will become a queen. The eggs themselves are the same. The physical egg is the same for a drone as well, but a drone would have an unfertilized egg, so that therefore it becomes a drone. But a queen egg and a worker egg are the same. So what happens is the colony is going to recognize there's no queen pheromone, we have a problem. They're going to make an emergency queen cell. They're going to find a nice young larva, and they're going to go ahead and make a queen cell around it, and they're going to feed it royal jelly. Now, of course, all, you know, worker brood gets royal jelly for a couple of days, and then they switch over to a mix of some bee bread and some nectar and other things. But when they were trying to make a queen, it'll just get 100% royal jelly, super nutrient rich, very dense. At day 8, they cap that queen cell. The queen has another 8 days of development, going from the larval to the pupal phase and then ultimately emerging as a new virgin queen at 16 days. Now, that queen is going to take up to 7 days to reach sexual maturity after she emerges. So we're at day 23 now, 16 days to emerge, another 7 days. We're 23 days in. Now, that queen has to go and complete her mating flight and then begin laying, which is usually about another week, roughly. I mean, she could reach sexual maturity at day 4, do her mating flight, she's back in a week, and then maybe at day 9 or 10, maybe she's laying. But generally, about 2 weeks is a good time frame. So now we're at about 30 days. So 30 days in, the colony will now begin to support this queen as she is starting to lay new eggs. Now, the average lifespan of a bee is really variable depending on the time of year, the activity, how many bees you have doing work versus bees that are out foraging. But somewhere in that, like, 32, 35 to maybe 42, 45, maybe even as much as 50 in some cases, days. But, you know, a good average is probably like 36 to 40 days. So we're at day 30 before they even start laying new eggs. We have 21 more days for the first replacement worker to emerge. So we are 51 days in. So I was chatting with this gentleman on, I think it was the 9th. So if he said, hey, I'm going to go out and do this split on June 10th, the day after we spoke, that would mean that he would see his first new worker emerge around July 29th. Now, at that point, I really don't know if anything is even really left in his colony, because you figure all of the workers that were there handling things when the split was done, they're all pretty much dead. The only thing that colony is going to have left is any workers that emerged that were on frames of brood that emerged while that queen was developing and while she was, you know, doing her mating flight and maybe even caring for those first few eggs. But that colony is going to be in a really, really tough spot. Now, again, every area is different, but I can tell you that where I am, I would have to feed this colony the whole time. They would have to have pollen substitutes. I would probably have to have like a pollen heavy patty in there. Or like I said, I did a video just today on a pollen feeder. By the way, I'll have that release probably within the next 6 to 12 hours. By the time you're hearing this, the video on the pollen feeder, the PVC-based pollen feeder, should be up and on YouTube, just youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies. But if you're putting out pollen feeders like that, or if you want it in the hive, which would probably be recommended in a situation like this so they have constant access to this, but you would end up having sugar syrup, pollen patties. You would be feeding the heck out of them. Now you got to deal with robbing issues. And there's so many reasons why that would be a huge, huge challenge. So that goes back to my earlier statement around timing. Timing is just such a really, really critical component of this. I'm a big proponent of splitting. I'm a big fan of doing it when the timing is right. Even if you said, hey, look, I really want to grow things a little bit. We've got a great, you know, all summer flow, because that makes it a little bit different. There are areas where they have a shorter overall season, but it's one constant nectar flow. Well, you can do that. That's a different scenario, right? If you go ahead and do a split today, you know, today is June 12th, you do a split today in this kind of a approach, you can very well pull it off if you have several months of flow and they can continue. But the problem is, you just don't have the number of bees in that transitioning from the ones that are dying off to the ones that are new and replacing them. There's a really big void there. So if you were able to do it, if you had a really big explosive colony, again, why this works really well in the spring, you could dump 6 frames of brood in there and you wouldn't have anything to worry about, because they're going to just keep popping off for the next, you know, you're going to have 500-800 bees emerge every day for the next, you know, 15, 20 days or something like that. So that's a completely different scenario. Now, I want to talk about, you know, we've talked about some reasons and ways and methods and approaches around splitting. I'm going to tell you a couple of reasons to not split, because I think that whenever you're going into this, especially as a new beekeeper, and this is why I love the Discord room. I'm not trying to hype it up. Like, I mean, we don't get paid. There's no money exchange. It's a free place you can go and share ideas with other beekeepers and ask questions and things like that. A lot of people answer questions. I do when I'm online and available. But what's great about it is you can come in there and say, hey, I've never really done a split before. I was thinking about doing one right now. What do you guys think? And, you know, as with everything in beekeeping, the joke is, you know, you ask 10 people and you get 15 different answers. But the reality is, you know, you probably ask 3, 4, 5 people and you're going to get at least 1 or 2, maybe 3 different answers on that. So get as much information as you can so you can make educated and informed decisions about your path forward. But I'm going to give you a couple reasons why you shouldn't split. Never do like a just because split. Like you woke up one day and you're like, hey, you know what? I don't have anything on the calendar today. Let's go do a split. I'm going to discourage you from doing that. When you become an expert beekeeper and you've mastered the craft and you've been through all 3 of the courses, which we're trying to get released within the next couple of years, you can go ahead and get a little wild every now and then and try new things and try something different. And on a whim, just do that if you want. But as a rule of thumb, I would recommend having purpose and being very deliberate about everything you're doing in beekeeping. Solicit information and feedback from others. And I think that you'll find that that information exchange and sharing will serve you very well. Number 2 reason why you should not split. My mentor said it's a great idea. Now, I used to be on board with telling people to listen to their mentor and what they say. My feelings on this have changed a little bit. Now, I don't want to always pick on the mentor. We've been picking on them a little bit lately. But if the mentor says to you on April 15th, yeah, you know, splitting would be a great idea. They mean on that day or shortly thereafter, right? Just because they said that in April doesn't mean it's still a good idea in August. So it's important that the mentor isn't always the one taking the heat round for that, because they gave you really great, actionable, useful, and accurate information on April 15th. But there's kind of an expiration to that information because you can't necessarily do that whenever you want. Like, you know, you're not going to do it on November 15th, right? So take what your mentor says with a grain of salt, but also take it in context, right? Assess your mentor. I feel bad that I'm kind of picking on him and I'm not meaning to do that. We've just had, this has absolutely been the year of bad advice. This is our 5th year. I've never had more stories of the bad advice. And last year was a lot, but this year has topped it. All right. Next reason why you would not want to do a split. And again, I'm not picking on the gentleman who sent the email, but he says, hey, I want to assess drone availability in my area. Now, like I said, I'm a big fan of a self-sustaining apiary. That's what everybody really should be targeting if they have the ability to do so. But if you wanted to do that, if he's like, hey, you know, I really want to assess drone availability in my area and just see if I can get a queen mated. Cool. That's awesome. Take a queen cell and then use like a half a cup of bees, maybe a little bit more, just like you would use if you were doing a mite wash. Get about a half a cup of young nurse bees. Put them into a mini mating nuke with a queen pheromone strip and a little thing of some sugar syrup. Those little mini mating nukes have a little reservoir for some sugar syrup. Go ahead and put some in there. I also recommend putting something in there with that will help them to have something to hold on to. Like I got these little lightweight wooden floats that I made, and I would drop those in. They can walk across them because you will drown a whole bunch of bees in those little nukes that are completely open like that. So put something in there that gives them something to climb on or hold on to get out of the syrup. But yeah, the queen pheromone strip is really good to have. It keeps them settled until that virgin queen gets back from mating. But that doesn't cost you anything. The queen cells are free. Your colony is going to make them anyway if they're crowded. Half a cup of bees, I mean, that's a mite wash, right? So go ahead and do that. And then you can assess and see what happened if you want. And she gets mated, awesome. Now you have a spare queen. You can put her in a nuke and just go ahead and start, you know, raising an additional brood frames or whatever you want to do. But don't take an entire colony and divide them in half, which leads into our number 4 reason. Taking 50% away from a productive colony and creating 2 weak colonies at a vulnerable time is really, really tough. And again, like I said, I absolutely love and I appreciate questions like this because it really allows us to talk through everything as a group and for everyone to kind of understand the different thoughts, ideas, approaches. So it's a great conversation to have, and I love a lot of it. I love a lot of the aspects to it, from a management standpoint and from what the gentleman's ideas are and the vision. All those things are great. We just got to make sure we're doing it with consideration of timing. Okay, everybody, as we wrap up, I want you to remember this Saturday is the 250th birthday of the U.S. Army, so please wish them a happy birthday, which also coincides with Burn Down America Day, so feel free to let us know how you'll be participating on that one. Remember to bring full face coverings, as all COVID mask requirements are in effect for all riot locations nationwide. And if it gets exciting enough, we may be live streaming the chaos right here at the Beekeeping for Newbies YouTube channel. I don't think we're going to do that one. But anyway, be safe out there, right? Hey, I'm all for protesting and making your voice heard and letting people know when you have a problem with something. I think that this is a little different. So please just be careful, be smart, be safe. And, you know, take care, be kind to one another. Remember that I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.